Yes, hello, this is Danhausen here, very nice for evil, and you are listening to Bob After Dark. Subscribe or be cursed.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever wonderful, ever vampiric, ever cape wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. Yes, back for another rousing episode.
Rousing episode,
Bob After Dark.
Yeah. Yeah. What's been going on with you, Count Panic?
Well, you know, Bob, not too much. Just doing the vampire thing. But, Bob, I got to give you a shout-out. I mean, today as we record this.
Oh, you're giving me a shout-out.
Of course, it's Mardi Gras and all that good stuff. But it's also...
Look, I understand it's Mardi Gras for our fans in Louisiana, and I get that. I'm all for it.
You're all for it?
However, today means something different to Count Panic and
Bob, I'm...
And millions of other people in the world, too. But specifically Count Panic and I today.
Of course. I'm a Polish vampire, of course.
Yeah, a Polish host yourself.
If you're watching on Jet TV, Bob, you gifted me with a punchki, which is a pastry filled with
something.
Custard, jelly. This is a jelly one, it looks
like. I believe you got a cherry one there, Count.
Cherry, I will consume that after the show. But, Bob, happy punchki day.
Happy punchki day to you, Count Panic. Have you had one yet today?
I may have indulged earlier.
I indulged myself earlier, but I could have not bring you one.
No, I thank you, Bob. I mean, of course, this signifies what this day is all about.
Exactly. Shout out Calumet Bakery, best on the south side for a punch game.
There you go.
All right, Count, we got to get your weekend update before we move on to the show.
Bob, of course, as we venture into the springtime here, we get, you know, as we're filming this also, too, it's a pretty rainy night here in the region. But the weekend was pretty good, Bob. I can't complain. You know, not a whole lot going on, but had a good weekend. How about you?
You know, I got to see that Heart Eyes movie.
Heart Eyes? It's a horror movie,
It's
right?
a horror comedy.
A horror comedy.
There was some... Horror comedies are always a hit or a miss for me.
Yeah.
Like... There's the ones that try really hard to be funny, and then it just kind of falls flat.
Yeah.
And then you have ones that are, like, incredible, where it just kind of happens naturally. Like Shaun of the Dead, for example.
Great.
One of my personal favorites. That's a horror comedy.
It is.
This one falls in the middle between the two. I liked it enough. It's worth a watch, especially if you're into, like, romance gore, I guess you can say. It was pretty fun. And then I got to spend some time with the Windy City Ghostbusters on Saturday for our post-holiday meetup, and I won an award.
A major award.
Yeah.
What'd you win?
The Peter Venkman Award for community contribution.
Oh, hey, well, you could do a lot in the community, Bob.
I try to, at least. You know, I think I try too hard some days, but I do my best.
So that's up on the mantle right now?
It's sitting on my suitcase.
There you go. Well, I'll be on the mantle soon enough.
It'll be on the mantle soon enough. Yeah. Now, Count.
Yeah.
If this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly show where we talk about legends, lore, and supernatural things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, Count Panic's favorite punch key filling.
Yeah, Bob, you know, I'm an equal opportunist. I like them all. I mean, I had blueberry earlier. This is a nice cherry-filled one. I also like, Bob, the custard, of course, chocolate, whatnot. So let's go with that as number one, and then...
I have trouble picking between the C's. Cherry, chocolate, cheese, custard.
Yeah.
A
lot going on there.
Yeah, I think cherry will always be my favorite.
Cherry's the favorite to go to. Of course, maybe slightly warmed up a little bit. You get that extra.
Warmed up? What kind of monster are you?
You warm it up a little bit and you get that extra.
You're crazy.
Extra jelly coming out.
Yes. So occasionally, folks, how the show works is we split the show up into two parts. First part of the show is where we cover the weird, spooky news of the week, and then we dive into the lore of the week, unless we have a guest.
Yeah.
Which we have a really cool guest this week for you guys, and I will let Count Panic introduce our guest.
Of course, and you can still chime into the show 219-845-1100 if you talk to Bob or our guest, which our guest being, of course, paranormal investigator, cryptozoologist David Aller is on our Zoom line here, Bob.
I am so jazzed. I was aware of David's work well before I literally the luck of a chance to get to find this individual through Ghostbusters of all things. So I'm really lucky to have him on here. So David, take it away. Hello.
The magic of Zoom.
Thanks for having me, guys. This is an honor. So, yeah, I guess just ask me some questions and I'll see some answers, you know?
Oh, of course. So tonight we're just going to kind of unwind a little bit. We're going to get to know you and the fans are going to get to know you. And because you were coming on before and you're like, oh, man, sorry about, you know, appearance stuff. You have the look of a cryptozoologist and you have such the grit to it, and it looks so good. So I just want you to know, don't you worry, you fit the image 100%.
All right, that's really weird. I've had other people say that, and it's like, I asked a guy one time after he said that, I said, well, what do you mean by that? He said, well, if I were going to draw a picture of a Bigfoot hunter, I would draw you. So I guess it's good. I mean, I don't know.
Trust me, it's a good thing. Most people look at me and they're like, man, you look like you are a Sasquatch. So it's kind of good to be talking to Sasquatch.
Find Bob.
So, David, let's take you far back as you could remember. And we'll encompass both paranormal and cryptozoology as a whole. Where does your fascination start? Does it start in cryptozoology or does it start in the general paranormal? Or let's get your secret origin story.
Well, as a kid, 6, 7, I was always into monster movies. And if there was a Saturday afternoon monster movie on, I watched it, you know. So at that time, I thought, you know, monsters were fake. They're cool, but they're fake, okay? When I was 8 or 9, I read an article in Reader's Digest magazine about the Patterson-Gimlin film. And it scared the crap out of me, and it absolutely fascinated me. And I ran to Mom, and I said, look, here's this story about hairy monsters. They're real. They're alive. And are they around here? And she said, well, I think that says it's just California. I don't think they're around here. But years later, I found out they were around my house in Illinois. But from that point on, I began to collect every book I could find, every story I could find. There was a comic book that Gold Key put out called Ripley's Believe It or Not, True Monsters and Demons. And there was a one-page article about the same film in that. And it had the great lurid illustration, and I just loved it. And over time, other things were incorporated, UFOs, aliens, ghosts, but Bigfoot creatures were always there first and foremost. And I just began to collect and research and collect stories. And I discovered Ivan Sanderson,
right,
who was a very well-known cryptid hunter. The fact that he was a well-known scientist was what drew me to him, because he wasn't just a monster hunter. He was an established scientific entity. And here he was out here. I think he wrote the greatest book about Bigfoot creatures. And more it just was a fever. And I told myself, one of these days I'm going to be Ivan Sanderson. And that's kind of sort of where I am now. I'm also known as a Indiana Jones of cryptid hunting, because I go places where other people don't go or just refuse to go. I told myself that when I get to a point in my life where I can afford to travel, then I'm going everywhere I can to look for these creatures. And I met a woman who luckily wanted to travel as bad as I did. So early on in our marriage, we began to travel and went to Canada. That's where I had my first callback, Bigfoot callback, and, wood knock kind of situations.
Sure.
Went to the Yucatan, and that's where I had my first paranormal experience in the pyramids. And Bigfoot was always there. And it's so now I've actually been researching, actually on the ground hunting these creatures for over 30 years. And I have seen things, I've done things, I've experienced things that a lot of people just will say there's no way that that happened. And it did. There are things out there that can rip your head off and jam it down your bloody gullet. And I've seen them, I've heard them, I've had experiences with them. And Yeah, I've had a crazy life.
That's then you fit into the Bob After Dark family just fine. We have the punch eating vampire that produces the show, and then you have me, who people believe is the Mothman. I can assure you, I'm not, but people believe I am. So you fit right in. Let's talk about your first outing. So you started, you said you wanted to get to a point where you can travel. So let's talk about your very first ever outing. And did you go in, you, where'd you say it was one more time?
Well, we went to Canada.
Okay.
In the Banff area. And this was an area that has more sightings than any other area in North America. Unfortunately, we didn't get a whole lot of activity, but on that same trip, we stopped in California. We went to Ape Canyon. And of course, that's like a mecca for Bigfoot hunters. And so I got in and I was moving through the forest and I was doing the wood knocks and calls. You know, it was early on in my research, so I put a lot of stock in wood knocks and calls. I'm not there now. You know, I think there are other things that are a little bit better. But at that point, wood knocks and calls is what I was doing. And I got nothing. I was all over that valley and that in through that canyon and got nothing. So I had to come back out, and the lava flow was to my right. And I stepped up into the lava flow and looked to my right, and there was Mount St. Helens. And I thought, well, I'll do one more. And I gave out the best Bigfoot yell that I could muster. And I waited just a few seconds. And from way off in the distance, I got that classic bell tone that you can't, no human can do this sound. There's almost like three tones going on at the same time. And I was satisfied. And that was the first callback that I got. Later on in that same area, I was wood knocking and went up to this one small bunch of trees. I mean, it was, I say small, but it was very, very twisted. These trees were growing like in one huge mob. And I was climbing up the hill and I had a steady rhythm, bop, bop. And I would wait, get a little bit closer, bop, bop, get a little bit closer, bop, bop. And from those woods came a deep wood on wood sound. It was just like boom, boom, whatever it was doing. I don't know if it was hitting or if it was two hunks of wood, but it was deep and it mimicked what I had been doing. So there may even have been some subsonic frequencies, because immediately when that happened, I had to get away. And I was not afraid at all, but something in my body, in my mind, was saying, get out of here. And I began to back down the hill. But I was able to shake myself out of it, and I climbed back up the hill. And by that time, whatever it was gone, or else it didn't mimic anything I was doing. But that was, I believe, the first subsonic frequencies I had ever been hit by. And that's happened to me a couple other times in my research.
So let's dial it back just a pinch, because for the uneducated, let's start with knocking. What is knocking for the uneducated, if you can explain that?
Yeah, wood knocking, most people do it with a mallet. Could be a bat. It could be a hunk of wood. I have a piece of cedar that I use almost exclusively. And you hit on trees or you hit on another stick. And it seems, and I say seems, I say that a lot, because at this point, nobody knows anything.
Sure.
People call me an expert. I'm the first to tell you I'm not an expert, because there aren't any experts in this field. I don't care who you see on television. I don't care what you're told. We don't know enough about these creatures right now for anyone to be experts. And when you hear somebody tell you something matter-of-factly on television, there's nothing matter-of-fact. So I use the word seems a lot. It seems like these things communicate with wood knocks. I think that's the case, because I myself have been traveling along trails, and I come to a T. There's a trail running in front of me, and I have to make a decision left or right. And one time, right before I made my turn, I heard a knock, knock, behind me. And I thought, well, that's weird. I made my turn and one up ahead of me went knock, knock. So I truly believe they were communicating. This one told that one he's coming. When I made my turn, it acknowledged, okay, he is coming my way. And this happens to me a lot. When you're in certain areas, you know you're being followed. And you can hear the knocks behind you and you can hear the knocks ahead of you. So that's what I was doing when I started work in Canada. I relied a lot on wood knocks and calls, you know, the standard call.
Sure.
Since then, I have gotten into sound blasting using monkey sounds. I use the music of John Anderson, the lead singer for Yes. A lot of different things, but the wood knocking is one of the first ways people start investigating. It's a very common thing.
And you mentioned the subsonic. Can you describe what that means too, please?
Yeah, that is, if you've ever been, or you say you're a little bit familiar with me, I don't know if you've ever been to one of my lectures, but I talk a lot about side A and side B. Side A is the side that most people start with when they began to research Bigfoot creatures. Side A believes these are purely physical creatures subject to every physical law, such as we, possibly a North American ape, possibly a primate. But it doesn't take you long. If you're serious, if you're out there a lot, it doesn't take you long before you start experiencing side B. Side B is the side that side A kind of makes fun of. They don't believe there's anything beyond the physicality of these creatures. Well, I've experienced it. So side B is a spirit-based origin. The Native Americans have always said that these are spirit beings that pass back and forth through realities, and they can be right in front of you and you can't see them. I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to talk in sci-fi terms, but I have experienced that. I am completely, totally on side B now. Part of side B is the subsonic frequencies. It seems, there's that word again, it seems that these creatures can affect you with vibrations that they produce. Now, this is not unusual. This happens quite a bit in nature. Tigers do it. Tigers can produce a sound, a subsonic frequency that can completely paralyze its prey. There are films of tigers walking right up to deer, antelope, you know, whatever they're pursuing. They just walk right up, and it's because the subsonic frequencies have completely paralyzed this creature. There are other animals that do this. Elephants can communicate 100 miles using subsonic frequencies. Our army is working on weaponry based on subsonic frequencies. Subsonic frequencies can rattle your brain. In its case, it can rattle your eyeballs. It can keep nerve impulses from moving back and forth. They can make you nauseous. They can give you headaches. They can, it seems as though subsonic frequencies can actually blind you and keep you from seeing things that are right in front of you or make you see things that aren't there. So it is a real thing, and scientists know this. So to say that this creature seems like it has this ability, I don't think is very far-fetched at all. But I have been one other time hit by subsonic frequencies, and I describe it almost as an entire body orgasm. This particular one didn't hurt me at all, and it didn't make me afraid. It just thrilled me is the only word I can use. It thrilled me. I could feel every vein in my body pumping blood, and this lasted for about 30 seconds while I was pursuing this one. And I think it was right there, and it either turned around or came out of a portal. There's another word I hate to use, but these things seem to be able to go invisible through portals. But I think it came out of a portal and hit me with this, not in a bad way. I don't think it was upset. I think it just wanted to let me know it was there. They seem to do that a lot. Sometimes they want to push you out of the woods by screaming and yelling and doing a lot of things. Other times they just want you to know that they're there. So subsonic frequencies are a real thing. They're acknowledged by science. And most Bigfooters on B side have experienced it. Even Bigfooters on A side will admit that there's something going on there. So yeah, it's a real thing.
That is, you know, I've heard the side A and side B statements before. I don't think I've ever heard a side B so real as you've described it. Here up in Chicagoland, we have we had an encounter. Dr. Ben Vanderson, cryptozoologist, had the encounter, and Linda Godfrey reported on something similar of the concept of this thing enters space, the entire, you know, wooded area you're in kind of goes silent, and he experienced a tree trunk being hucked at him, and it almost as if this thing created its own archway in the woods for it to present itself to them. And, you know, I hear that story, and he's told me that story several times, and it just puts a lot in the perspective for you that these things aren't just, you know, apes lost in the woods, but there's something really to it. And, you know, it's a really good fact that you brought up the natives and calling them spirits, because, I mean, there's stories of them using their skulls as warding off, like, evil spirits, just of a skull of one. So it's very fascinating that you bring up the side B argument, because that's right. Where I stand. I'm a side B guy myself.
Right, right. So, like I say, you can't research it that long before you begin to have, like, the orbs.
Yeah.
I have not seen an orb in connection with Bigfoot activity. I think I had one manifest behind me in Alabama. That's a whole huge story that I'll tell you if you got time.
Oh, you got to trust. You have the whole time yourself, so.
Okay. All right. Well, let me tell you the first time I experienced side B.
Sure. And
keep in mind, up until this point, I was complete side A. These were physical creatures, subject to every physical law, such as we, these were North American apes. Now, I still had the questions. Why can't we get a good picture? Why can't we get good video? Why are they able to avoid trail cams? All the questions that the skeptics have, I had those. And side A people have those too. But we are convinced through our research that these things are real, so we kind of gloss over the questions sometimes, and that's fine. You know, we're out there doing the work, so sometimes the questions aren't answered. So side A, that's where I was. So I'm walking down this trail right after, this was the Pagoda site, and for those of you who aren't familiar with the Pagoda site, this is a site that I discovered in Tennessee in 2021. It has now been called a holy grail of Bigfoot sites because of all the structures, the interactions, the sounds. This site is 150 acres of weirdness, and I wrote a book about it. This book just came out, The Pagoda. It's published by Premium Press America. You can order a copy. It's $29.99. The number is 615-353-7902. Talk to Betty, and she will take care of you.
Excellent. We'll make sure we get more time for plugs later on, too, because cool. We want to make sure.
Cool. Yeah.
We do have a caller calling in, I think, for a question with you, David.
We have a caller. Wonder. We'll take it live.
Yeah.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, Bob. This is John. How are you?
John, how are you? I figured, of all people, you and the missus would be super interested in this episode.
Very much so. We've been watching and listening to your guest, Dave, I believe his name is?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Dave, and you do have that Indiana Jones type look to you. So, you know, I know Thank Bob you. Referenced, you know, at the beginning, but, you know what? I don't know where to start. I mean, you're quite the interesting, you know, expert, if you will, on Bigfoot. We're Bigfoot fans, especially my wife. So, you know, just listening to your story has been fascinating. And, I guess I'm going to ask you, the Bigfoot creature is human-like, am I right? But it comprehends like a human. Do they know that they're being sought after? Are they fearful of? Can you say how close you ever? Estimately, were you to a Bigfoot creature?
When they're manifested, that's the thing. These things can definitely disappear. And I know that sounds absolutely stupid, but it's just like the Native Americans say, they can walk right in front of you and you don't see it. You can hear them walking in front of you, but you can't see them. I have been as close as 15 feet. I have other researcher friends that have been closer than that, but I saw a young one. It was hiding in the weeds behind one of the pagodas. And that's, I'll explain what pagodas are. But it was hiding in these weeds. I walked right up on it, and then it jumped up and did the spider crawl out. It was so red, I thought it was a fox. My mind was trying to make it a fox, but it was way bigger than a fox. Then my mind started trying to make it a fawn, because that's what fawns do. They will hide in the weeds and pop up at the last minute. Well, this was way bigger than any fawn or fox. It was kind of a weird situation because all I saw was the back of its head and its back. It was laying on the ground, and it did the spider crawl out. And if you're not familiar with spider crawl, these things don't just walk on two legs. They will get down and crawl just like spiders. And this thing looked like it had a rope at the front of it, and it was just pulled out. There was not a whole lot of movement by legs, but yeah, it was very crazy. And so 15 feet, I was within 15 feet of that one. The first one that I saw at the pagoda site was probably, 40 to 50 feet away at most. And
well, that is quite interesting. I mean, like I said, you're amazing in in what you're putting out there. So I guess more or less what you're describing, you know, the distance you were by the Bigfoot. So they're more or less like you described it, a deer-like creature, where they're just fearful, or they don't, you know.
I don't think they're afraid of anything, because they know anytime you're in the woods, that they every time I walked into this area around the pagoda site, I think from day one, they knew I was there because of things that happened. I think they had sentries. It seemed like they had sentries posted all the time. They're watching the woods all the time. And as soon as someone walks in, they begin to signal to each other. So it's not that they're afraid. It's just that they don't want to be seen right now. And I hate to be so mysterious about it, but there are questions that I still have. And I've talked to Native American friends on the reservations in New Mexico, and they say it's a real spirit-based being. So I don't think they have any fear of anything, especially not us.
Again, that's very quite interesting. And, you know, thank you for coming on Bob After Dark tonight.
Well, thank you.
Rarely he has a guest, you know, like this. So appreciate you guys, however you got them on, and we'll keep watching and listening. So
before John goes, Bob, did you know John is celebrating a birthday tomorrow?
No, John, happy birthday to you.
Hey, thank you.
2021 again, John, right?
Yeah, for 10 years already. Same 21. So. But yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, John, of course.
All right. You guys take care, and I'll continue watching and listening. Thanks.
Sounds good, John. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So,
back to the situation.
Yes.
I'm walking through the woods after doing call blasting. I got no action during the call blasting, which puzzled me because I knew there was something going on out there in front of me, but it never manifested itself. So now I've got my equipment. I'm heading down the trail. Now, if I'm going at 12 o'clock, this thing screams at me from 7 o'clock. I was already past it. I never saw it. So it sounded like a woman being murdered, which is classic. At that point, I had never heard that. I had heard the grunts. I had heard the growls. I had heard the calls. I had heard what I thought was everything they would do vocally. I'd never heard the scream. So it sounded like a woman being murdered. And in my mind, that's what I had. I saw, I envisioned a woman coming at me like something from a Frazetta painting and just ready to stab me. I think that was the subsonic frequencies. I think they made me see that because they wanted me to go. I turn around and I got my arm up. I'm ready for this knife to hit me. And I look 40 to 50 feet in front of me. And here is this form running parallel to the course that I was taking. It hit a tree line, made a 90-degree left, and began to pop trees all the way out. Pow, pow, pow. Now, there's no animal that I know of that can pick up a stick and pop trees. So by this time, the adrenaline is just making me crazy. I still wasn't quite sure of what I saw, but I knew what I thought it was. And I didn't want to tell myself this, but I knew that I had just seen a Sasquatch. So after I calmed down, I thought, that's the coolest thing I've ever experienced. I'm going to meet that thing. So I get my equipment. Now, I'm very familiar with these trails. I've been on these trails many, 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 many times. And I knew that the trail I was on would make a left just not far from me. I was going to go down, make my left, and I knew the trajectory that that thing was going, I could probably meet up with it. So that's what I did. I got down to where I thought it was probably coming out, and I hunkered down. When you're a Bigfoot hunter, you learn how to hunker. So I was hunkered down behind a tree, and I began to hear pops and snaps. And then I thought, well, it's not very smart to jump out from behind a tree and face one of these things. I mean, if it's scared, who knows what's going to happen. So I back my way out and get back onto the trail. Sure enough, I start hearing the screams. Big Daddy starts screaming, and I'm standing on the trail, and this deer jumps right out in front of me within 10 feet, and it's looking at me with the Bambi eyes, and you can tell it's scared to death. And it's like, what am I going to do now? So here I am standing with this deer in front of me, and I've seen the videos where these things rear up and start just ripping you to pieces. And I didn't want that to happen, but I didn't want to move because I didn't want to frighten it. Big Daddy is screaming in the back. I've got a deer in front of me. And all of a sudden, there's another one starts screaming to my right. So I look over to where the sound is coming from, and there's nothing there. Nothing. There's nothing. There's not even anything that a creature could hide behind, as close as the sound was coming at me. So now I've got Big Daddy screaming. I got a deer in front of me, and I got an invisible monster to my right. That's when my mind completely changed. And I realized that this is exactly what the Native Americans have always said they were: spirit beings that pass back and forth through reality. Now that explains why I didn't see it. I passed it. Didn't even know it was there until it wanted me to know it was there. It was also signaling another one, I think, because I think I got in the middle of a deer hunt. That the first one was driving the deer forward so that the other one could jump it. That's what I think was going on. But I got in the way of supper, and these two were screaming in their way of going, ah! And at that point, the deer bolts over my shoulder and I'm standing there between two screaming monsters. And I'm thinking, this is not what I signed up for. I want these things to be real physical creatures, but they're real spiritual creatures. This explains why you can find one track. I myself have found one perfect track, nothing in front of it, nothing behind it, one track. Other people have found three tracks. How can you do that? Well, it's because they can phase in. They have a physicality, but they can control it when they're invisible. And I know that sounds stupid. I know that sounds sci-fi, and it makes me sound like a crazy person, but all I can tell you is what I've experienced.
Sure. I don't think you're crazy, for what it's worth.
So the next day I called my friend, Brenda Harris, who, she started the Paranormal Rangers on the Upper Fruitland Reservation in New Mexico. Very wonderful woman. If you ever get a chance to listen to her lectures, she's absolutely fascinating. As she said, David, you now understand what we mean. These are spirit creatures. They are not truly what most scientists will even give you credit for. Science won't even admit their existence, but the ones who do still see them in a physical kind of things, a North American ape. And she said, they're way beyond that. And I said, oh, I'd not know. I was between two of them, and one of them was invisible. So right there's where my mind changed, and I've never gone back. Once you cross into side B, you begin to see what side A, how they're fooling themselves. Okay. They don't want to admit certain things. And I'll tell you what, I shouldn't say this. I won't mention any names. Let's just say BFRO. They won't even take a report if it includes anything on side B. They only want side A, and that's all they report. To me, that's like if you see a car wreck and the police are asking you what you saw, if you leave out details, then you're not being honest, and you're controlling the narrative. That's what BFRO does. They control the narrative. I personally know people who have left BFRO because head dude won't accept certain things in the reports. So everyone understands the side B. Some people just don't want to gravitate over there. But I think more and more researchers like myself are completely understanding that side B is where at some point everybody's going to go. You still have the holdouts that it's a North American ape. But the question is, if it's a North American ape, why don't we have them in zoos? That's a side A thing. You know, they won't admit that there's something weird going on there. If it's truly a physical creature, a North American ape, there is nothing that we can't find that's physical. The snow leopards. We've got snow leopards in zoos. Snow leopards are like the hardest creatures, first of all, to see. Most researchers have never even seen one. But we've been able to capture them and put them in zoos. Not a Sasquatch. We don't have a Sasquatch. So that should tell you right there that these creatures are not like a snow leopard. They're visual. You can see them. You can hear them. They eat. They poop. They bleed. And then they disappear. They leave tracks. They have a physicality. But they seem to be able to control their weight. And the reason I say this is because some of these tracks seem like they're deeper than they should be. Other tracks seem like they're not as deep as they should be. So it's like they can kind of play with their weight. Given the length of the track, and you have to extrapolate a weight, the weight doesn't always reflect the depth of the footprint in the soil. So there's another thing that does not make sense unless you're on side B, and then it makes complete sense.
Right. So do you buy into John Keel's theory of a window dimension where they kind of come and go, and that's where these cryptids belong, is wherever that window it ends up, and then they just kind of cross over into ours?
John Keel was another writer that I discovered early, and I love his stuff. Strange Creatures from Time and Space absolutely changed my life. I do think, now, I don't know what to call it. I don't know. Some people call them portals. Yeah. Some people call them doorways. Some people, we actually need a better word. We need something, I think, less sci-fi sounding, more, oh gosh, I don't even know the word, more realistic.
Concrete. Maybe. I get what you're saying.
More acceptable to the ear of the person who doesn't quite accept what's going on. But the, you know, the term doorways, portals, I mean, that's what they are. And whether that's an actual opening or a hole, I'm not sure. I think some of these creatures, Dogman included, can just leave their existence in this realm. And I mean, it's not even like the portals and doorways imply that, like our doors, they're in certain places and you've got to move to that place before you cross over. I don't think that's the way it is. I think they just can cross over anytime they want.
Sure.
And move back and forth. And even as I'm saying this, I hate it. I hate to talk like this, but I've seen it. I've had these things so close I can breathing and they sound like Darth Vader. And there was nothing there. And I research almost totally at night. Not I would say 90% at night. And I try not to shine flashlights, because if you're out in the woods, if you're in the dark, yeah, flashlights help you see, but they also help everything else out there see you. So I try to travel as best I can with no light. And it's at those times, these things seem to want to mess with me. They breathe. They make the little sounds as they're passing me. They'll get ahead of me and make sounds, and then I will flash my light. I'll wait as long as I can. I know they're right there. I'm hearing them. They're making noises for me. And I flash my light. There's nothing there. And yeah, I've had some amazing experiences. These things I've had them mess with me, like in a humorous way. Time when in this area there are things called glades, and these glades are just areas, open areas in the woods. They're actually considered deserts because of the depth of the soil, the plants that are there, the plants that aren't there. So it's a very unique area. So I was at a glade. I decided to head back toward the first pagoda, and it was a circuitous route. You know, it you couldn't just get there to here in a short time. You had to kind of, you know, move through all this stuff. Well, I no sooner get to the first pagoda than I hear back at the glade that I was at rock on rock. And it just would not stop. And I'm standing there going, that's at the glade. I was just there. Who's at the glade? So I make the circuitous route back to the glade. Just about the time I get there, the sound stops. And I'm thinking, what was that? I turn around and I head back down, circuitous route, back to the first pagoda. No sooner do I get there than again, nonstop. And I'm thinking, this is weird. So I go back to the glade. Just about the time I get there, it stops. Went back to the pagoda. Four times they did this to me. Until I realized they're punking me. They're wanting to see how many times they can get me to go back to the glade. Now, that was one of my first signals that there was more than one here, because you can't see from the pagoda to the glade. So there had to be multiple creatures signaling. Okay, it's like, yeah, he's going. Okay, and so then that second one would signal to the third one, or however many, but there was a circuit so that they could tell that guy to make the sounds or to shut up. There had to be more than one, because like I say, you can't see from the pagoda to the glade. So that's when I realized that these things have a humor. That's a human trait. That's not an animal trait. That's not an animal that we understand. Put it that way.
Sure.
They do have oddball humor, and they would mess with my experiments. They would do things with my experiments that a normal creature wouldn't do.
Do you think that's learned, or do you think that's instinct?
I think that's who they are. I think that's neither. That's neither. Okay. They are as spirit beings. Okay, if you want to get into that.
Sure.
As a Christian, I have studied spirits a lot. Okay. And there are only two kinds of spirits, light spirits, dark spirits. And these creatures will kidnap women. And we know that because of the stories that the Native Americans have told. There are stories come out of Canada that women are kidnapped. The natives in Canada say, do not let your women go into the woods. There's one or two stories where the woman is kidnapped, disappears for a while, and comes back pregnant. One lady actually gave birth to this creature, and it died at birth. And she said, I was always glad that it didn't survive, because I have no idea what this thing would have been. So something that kidnaps women is not a light spirit.
No.
I don't think. I think that's on the dark spirit range, and that actually goes back into Genesis, where it talks about the Nephilim. Now, I don't believe these things are Nephilim, but I think there is something akin to that. Creatures that can mate with women, that's not normal, okay? I mean human women. Right. Now, they can mate with their own women, but animals can't produce with other animals. Like there are only certain ones, and those two creatures are of the same species, like horses and donkeys will make a mule, but that's the same species. They breed within their species. Dogs and cats can't mate. So if it's true that Bigfoot creatures can impregnate human women, that's a bit odd. That's saying something. First of all, it would lead you to think there is the same species thing going on, but I don't think that's what it is. I think it's more like Genesis, where the sons of heaven, meaning the dark angels, mated with the daughters of men, and that's what created the Nephilim. The Nephilim are described, and it's not just in Genesis. These giants are throughout the Bible. That's what a lot of people don't understand. But if they can produce offspring with a different species, that's not normal. That's a bit odd. And we know what the Nephilim look like. They look like giant humans. So a hairy giant is different even than what the Bible describes. Like one case, when Moses led the people into the promised land, into Canaan, they had to defeat the giants that lived in Canaan. And that's something that a lot of people just pass over. The spies that Moses sent out into Canaan came back with stories about these guys are so big, we look like grasshoppers. So that was not an exaggeration. That was real. You know, they saw themselves as very small to these Nephilim creatures. So a hairy giant is different than what the Bible describes. So for the people who say these are Nephilim, I don't think that. But I do think there is a connection somehow, a spirit-based origin. So it's one of the many mysteries of Bigfoot creatures
outside of the realm of Bigfoot, because you were talking about your first paranormal experience, and I'm hoping you could touch on that a little bit.
Yeah,
you're like a jack of all trades, a Swiss Army knife of the paranormal, my friend.
I love that. No, I want to be. I try to be. It's something that's in me. I mean, I'm curious about all of it. You know, ghost hunting and hauntings. I've got a lot of theories on what ghosts are. But yeah, my first paranormal experience, real paranormal experience, we went to the Yucatan. And one of my goals was to explore at least one or two pyramids. Well, we get into the jungle. Now, the first weird thing was that I had a guide, and we're coming up to the pyramids, and I'm seeing elephants, elephant carved bas-relief kind of things coming off the corners of these pyramids. And I said, "What's with the elephant?" And he said, "That's not an elephant. That's the rain god." And I look at it, and it's like, dude, no, that's an elephant. I mean, it looked like I was in India. Okay, something that was on a temple, an elephant carving, big head, ears, trunk, curled up. And I said, that's an elephant. Now, we know there were no elephants in this part of the world. That's what we're told. Science tells us that. And that's right there, pow, was the moment that I began to doubt everything that science tells us. Science has an agenda, and they want us to believe certain things that aren't true. I don't know why. But think about all the things that you learned in school that now turn out to be not true. Every 10 years, there's changes. You can't keep the same school book for more than 2 or 3 years without it being outdated. So we learned stuff. We had to pass tests by learning what was considered true. Well, 3 years later, it's not true. But yet we passed the tests. And that's the way it's been all the way down through history. So science tells us there were no elephants in this part of the world ever. I'm looking at his carving of an elephant. And I said, you really don't think that's an elephant. And he acted like he was telling something he shouldn't. He said, yeah, I think it's a mammoth. Thank you. Thank you. He said, that's why we find ivory here in the jungle. Well, that's something that science tells us never happens. There were no elephants in this part of the world, but yet here's an elephant that they have to call a rain god, and they find ivory. So that was my first, this is a weird place. So now I'm getting up to the pyramids. I start climbing the pyramid. Now, the risers on these steps were so tall that I had to make a concerted effort to get my knee up high enough to get on them. The treads were so small that I'm almost having to put my foot sideways to get on it. And here again, I'm thinking this is diametrically opposed to what we're told happened here. We're told that the natives, the Mayans, who the Mayans still live there and they're shorter than me, we're told that Mayans that are 5 foot tall are climbing these stairs carrying sacrificial victims. Well, you can't get your leg up high enough and you got to put your foot sideways. This is wrong. If for whatever reason, National Geographic says this. I mean, everything you read about the pyramids, that's what you're told. I'm climbing these pyramids and I'm struggling. I got fairly long legs, and yet I'm having to really work to get up these stairs. So there is another weird thing about the Yucatan. So now I get to the door, and I'm looking, because there were like sentries down there. You're not supposed to go in, but okay, that's why I'm an Indiana Jones, right?
Yeah, of course.
So I'm standing at the door, and I'm looking, and I'm waiting until nobody's looking, and I just kind of slide in, and now I'm in the darkness. And in my pack, I had bought, specifically for this trip, a brand new flashlight. I bought brand new batteries. So I was ready. So I get off in here, and it's just like a cave. You know, it's completely dark. Once you get past the doorway and the light that seeps in, you start going through the tunnels, and you're doing the circuitous route, and you're making the turns. I get off in there, and I began to feel like something doesn't want me here. And I don't even know how to describe that, but I just had this feeling like, I'm being watched, and they don't want me here. And right about then, my flashlight just goes, and that quick, I'm in complete darkness. Brand new batteries, brand new flashlight. So here I am thinking, how do I get out of here? Nobody even knows I'm in here. My wife didn't even know I was in this pyramid. She's down below doing her thing. So I have to remember how to get out of this thing backwards in the dark. And I'm feeling the walls, trying to figure out, now, did I turn here? Or so as I'm doing this, I begin to hear a metal on metal sound. Ding, 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 ding. So I had to try to figure out what this was. Was this a bird? Then I realized, well, birds don't fly into darkness. Birds fly out of darkness. That's why you can have those zoo cages with no bars, where everything is dark in the room except the bird exhibit. Birds aren't going to fly into the dark. That's why they don't have to have bars on them. I thought, is that a bat? But it didn't sound like any sort of echolocation. It wasn't a high-pitched kind of squeak or anything like that. It was a very definite metal-on-metal sound. And I thought, well, that's not what it is. So I'm continuing. I finally round a corner, and I'm seeing light. So then I was able to get on down the hallway and out the door. That's my adventure. But 6 months later, I'm reading an article, and it said that people have heard this metal-on-metal sound in these pyramids, and nobody knows what it is. And it's like, dang. I'm one of the few people who have heard that, you know, and there's something crazy connected to it, because there was something in there that didn't want me there. Now, how it's connected to the pyramids, the sacrifices, I don't know. I don't know. And what the metal on metal sound would be, who knows? But I got to hear it, you know. That was the first, what I feel was truly a paranormal experience. Since then, I've had many. I've seen orb come out of a wall. The thing was that big, and it came out of the wall and went in front of the TV. It was mounted on the wall. The TV was behind it, and as it passed, the TV began to do that. You know, like you were looking at something on a hot road. You know how that happens.
Sure.
And it went on around and went into another room, and this was right after my wife, who was sitting on the bed next to me, kept saying, something's poking me in the side. You know, it feels like somebody's sitting next to me. And she kept thinking it was me. And I said, it's not me. I don't know what's going on. It's not me. But then this orb comes out. So, yeah. And Gettysburg, if you want to see orbs, go to Gettysburg. And my wife seemed to be able to attract these things. I've got pictures of her at Gettysburg, and these orbs are just gathered up around her. And I took shots seeing this on the camera. I began to take shots in all the other directions. There's nothing. But I would take a shot of Joyce and these orbs. I actually saw one coming at the lens while I was shooting. And this was a cool evening, a little bit windy. There were no bugs. There was no dust in the air. There was nothing that could have been, like some people say those are dust particles. Sometimes they are, but not like this. So there was nothing in the air, especially bugs. There were no bugs. This was toward the end of the year, and there were no bugs out. There's something was happening here with these orbs, and this was right outside of the one of the big battlefields, a very famous battlefield, and I can't think of the name of it, but take your camera to Gettysburg if you want to see orbs.
Well, David, we are running out of time, so I want to make sure.
No.
No, because we're not letting you go without getting some shameless plugs in.
Yeah.
Because cool. I know there's a big convention going on. We just got a book out that we want to talk about a little bit more, so let's get some plugs. Where do you want to start and where do you want to end? You take that over.
Okay, let's talk about the Atomic City Paranormal Symposium. This is May 16th and 17th in Paducah, Kentucky. This is going to be a big one. I've got 7 great speakers. I'll be speaking. Ron Moorhead will be speaking. Tamara Steyer will be doing a dowsing demonstration. We've got Geraldine Stith, who is the granddaughter of the family that the Hopkinsville Goblin event happened to. That's where these creatures came at the house and was right. Attacking, and they were shooting them. The bullets were bouncing off of them. I've got Ron Coffey and his wife, who talk about Kentucky cryptids. We have Anita Collier, And she and I had an amazing adventure in Alabama where we were actually talking to these creatures with EMF meters. That's crazy that you can use an EMF meter to communicate with a hairy monster. It was just the craziest thing that I have experienced so far in 30 years. So we have all those people. We've got a meet and greet. You can get up close and personal with all of the speakers. We've got a special movie event where we are showing Sasquatch Sunset. We've got the rights to show that at the local theater. It's going to be a lot of fun. And this is my second event that I have created. My first was in Cripple Creek, Colorado. Went great. So I decided let's do one in Paducah. So, check that out. You can go to the website, Atomic City Paranormal Symposium, and you'll learn everything you need to know. If you want to go there, you can get tickets on the website. You can be a vendor on the website. You can be a sponsor on the website. We've got a lot of people involved, and the city of Paducah has been great. They're 100% behind us. The next thing is, of course, the book, The Pagoda. This tells the entire story of my finding the three pagodas at this spot and everything that I dealt with, some of the stuff that I've talked about, the invisible monster that's in here. This is an amazing property. It's 150 acres. It's owned by the state. They don't advertise it because it's kind of rugged and you can get hurt really, really easily here. So they don't advertise it. They don't keep you from going on it, but they don't really advertise it. And it's one of the most amazing areas I've ever been in to do research. This book is published by Premier Press America. If you want a copy, it's $29.99. You can call Betty at 615-353-7902. And they accept Visa, MasterCard, Discovery, and American Express. They work with you very well. Just call them up, tell them that you saw me on this podcast, and they'll get you a copy. Again, that number is 615-353-7902. And that's the two big things I've got going. I just talked with another person in Kentucky, in another area of Kentucky, and he said, I'm just amazed that you're calling me because we're wanting to set up a Bigfoot conference ourselves. So I may be doing another one later in another part of Kentucky, but yeah, feel free to get a hold of me. You can find me at movieman3221@gmail.com. That's movieman3221@gmail.com. And tell me your story. I love to hear stories. If you got a property you want investigated, I'll come out and do it. That could be Bigfoot. It could be Dogman. It could be haunting. I'm there.
Well, that's amazing. Yeah. Count, do you have any questions? I didn't even realize our time went by. This has been one of our best interviews we've ever done. I was sitting here. I was so enthralled, you know. Yeah. There's things I'm learning, and I've been doing this a long time myself.
Well, we'll have to have David back.
We have to have David back. That's not a question. David was an amazing guest. You were great.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I've got so much else. I need to tell you about the Kentucky Massacre. That's an amazing story, but I'll save that one for later.
Sounds good.
David, thank you.
And thank you so much, David, for coming on. Count, do you have any closing words for the audience this evening?
Closing words, Bob. You know what, everybody? Keep having a great time out there. Eat your punchki.
That's exactly what you're going to be doing while you send me
I got a couple hours left here. I'm going to beat the clock challenge. But, Bob, another great episode, great guest. And until next time.
All right, folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. I just want to wish all of you sweet dreams, and to Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy doing and happy, comfortable in doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. Mom, I just want to wish you a good night, and to Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody, and remember the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.